Today's daf is Kuf Mem Dalet. We're going to start at the Mishnah, Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Bet at the bottom. Hiniach Banim Gdolim Uktanim. If a person dies, leaves over sons that are both younger and older, and the assumption is that the younger ones can't really handle, right? Everything's right now in the estate. It hasn't been divided up. And the younger ones can't really handle managing the money. If the Gdolim come in and start making a profit off of the joint property, so the proceeds are split equally between everybody. But if the Gdolim said, look, this is what our father left, this is our inheritance, you could take your part, I want to take my part and start making profit off of it. Or, okay, and let's say they don't divide it up. In other words, they kind of say, we're ready to make, right, to divide it, and we want to make profit off of it. And then they basically, what they're stipulating, the assumption is, it's a drop unclear to everybody how exactly it's made clear by this, but, and the Rashbam says, either they say it b'fnei Eidim, or they say it in a Beit Din, or b'tzibur. They have to make some sort of public declaration that this is so. And therefore, what they're basically saying is, okay, we're ready to divide it, and therefore, whatever profits we make, we want to keep the profits to ourselves. And the Rashbam actually adds, that, so what happened? Why didn't they divide it up? So it says, v'nitatzlu beitin lachlok, okay? Or, so either the beitin didn't divide it, which means that they actually took all the money, made profits off of it. So now it says, Hishbichu latzman, the shevach all goes to them. So it's unclear now. So the Rashbam brings an option that either the Beit Din nitzatzlu lachlok, or one second, mashen hashbiach nashbiach mechalkenu v'nitzatzlu lachlok, right? Az hishbichu latzman, right? So now there's a debate among the mefarshim whether what happens is they get all the profits. Because they made all the money, so the younger children are left with whatever portion they would have gotten minus the profits. Or, let's say they own, the Gdolim were half. So they get half the profits, and the other half of the profits are divided evenly among all the brothers. So it's unclear.
But it's clear that they used all the money.
It's not even, right, so it does sound like it's clear they used all the money to make profits. Or even if, well, they didn't have a share, that's the thing. Until it's divided up, no share is really all theirs. So, right, so if they only used it on their share, then obviously they get all the profits, right? Let's say they owned 50%, so they did it on 50%, they used 50% of the stuff, they made a profit, they for sure get all the profit. But what if they used everything? So then, what does it mean, hishbichu latzman? Does it mean they only get 50, right, profits on 50% of the land? Or, right, and the rest is divided evenly among all the brothers, including them, which means they get, right, they still get extra. Or do we say they just get the profits on the part that they did? Okay, so again, different ways of understanding it. But the main thing here is that since they made some sort of declaration, what they were saying is, and this we're going to see a common theme, we're not willing to work to make profit for you. If we're already going to work, the profits are going to be for us. And that's what they're basically saying. And since they made this declaration, it's obvious, right? They're basically saying, we're not mochel to you. We want to divide it up now so we can already start making profit because we're not going to make money off for you. Now, we're going to see in the Gemara that there's even cases where you don't make this declaration that is also obvious that they were mochel, that they were mochel or they weren't mochel. Okay, we're going to see the different cases. V'chein ha'isha, and likewise with a woman, she'shbicha et ha'nechasim, that she makes profit off the nechasim. Now here the Gemara is going to obviously ask, what do you mean the isha? She doesn't inherit. So what are we talking about? We'll get to it in the Gemara. But assuming the woman inherited the estate with the children, hishbicha et ha'nechasim, hishbicha la'emza. So again, if she invests in the property, it gets split evenly. Imamra, re'u ma shiniach li ba'ali, look what my husband left me. Hare ani osav ochelet, right? And again, she says, right, I'm going to make the I'm going to work and get the profits from it, right? That's osa ve'ochelet, like in the previous case. Hishbicha latzma. Okay, the shevach goes to her. Okay, because again, she's saying, I'm not willing to work for you to profit. Amar Rav Chaviva Bered Rav Yosef Bered Rava. Okay, Rav Chaviva says the name of Rav Yosef and the name of, I'm sorry, the son of Rav Yosef, the son of Rava. Mishmei de Rava. They all said in the name, right? Rav Chaviva said it in the name of his grandfather. Lo Shanu Ela. Okay, now we're back to the very first case. When it says Yishbichu La'emza, when the brothers don't say anything, right? So we assume they're sharing the profits. It's only Sheshavchu Nechasim Machmat Nechasim. Aval Shavchu Nechasim Machmat Atzman Yishbichu La'atzman. Okay, what does it mean, Shavchu Nechasim Machmat Nechasim? Or Shavchu Nechasim Machmat Atzman. So let's start with Shavchu Nechasim Machmat Atzman. If they either spent their own money to make profit, right? They wanted to increase the value of the land, so they invested in it from their own funds, or they worked the land themselves or did whatever needed to be done in order to make it worth more money. So let's say it's a renovation. They did the renovation themselves. Or they hired someone and paid with their own money, their own personal funds, for the renovator. So that's nechasim machmat atzman. And in that case, if they invested the money, then they clearly get the profits, even if they didn't say anything, because no one in their right mind, right, there's an assumption, even though they're brothers, right? No one in their right mind would spend their own money to make profits for other people. Okay, that's the assumption. So,
even in a family?
Even in a family, right? That's what they're saying.
Of course.
They're basically saying, of course, in a family, right? They're saying they wouldn't invest of their own money. Now, what's shabchu nechasim machmat nechasim then? Right, it's not shabach habame atzmo, then, right? There's nothing to discuss. So it must be that they hired someone with the estate money to do it, right? And all they did was maybe manage it, right? They hired the person. Right? That's not considered. But we're going to see here, there's a level of how much work would be considered you'd be willing to manage it, hire someone. Now, we all know if you've ever done any sort of shiputz or something, management is probably one of the most important jobs and not so simple. But they're basically saying if they hired out someone and they did it with funds from the estate and not their own personal funds, then they can't say, oh, we did it just for ourselves. Then that's the case of Hishbichu La'atzman. But if they hired someone... That's right. Sorry. That's Nechasim Machmat Nechasim, in which case, Hishbichan La'emza. The profits are split. But if they did it on their own, then Hishbichu La'atzman. So now they say, Ini, is that really true? V'hama Rabbi Chanina, afilu lo hiniach lehem avihem, ela udinai, hasachar la'emza. V'hai udinai, dimachmat atzmohu. So now let's work in the reverse. This Udinai, which we'll talk about in a minute, the Gemara says is machmat atzmo. In other words, he does it himself. In which case, what would you assume? Hashevach, right? Hishbichu la'atzmo. But what does it say in this case? If lo yinech lehem aviyah and ela Udinai, if that's all the father left him and he makes a profit off of it, then asachar la'emza, the sachar gets split by everybody. Okay, so how could that be if it's machmat atzmo? Okay, I specifically waited to define what this Udinai is, just so you understand the basics. So we have here a case where he does it himself, and yet he has to split the profits. So that seems to reject what Rav Chaviva said in the name of Rava, that machmat atzman, hishbichu la'atzman. So what's Udaina? There's a different, there's all different opinions. It might be a pesel where he rents it out to people. It might be a bor. The Rashbam says it's a bor b'kisuyo, and they would basically rent it out to people to use the water. And some people say it's a chair that they use, that they would sit on the chair to watch the fields. Okay, it's some sort of job where it requires supervision. So the assumption is, this is machmat atzmo, because also I read one of the mafreshim say, it's not the kind of job you could ever really find someone to do, because maybe it's just, I was thinking it's like a toll booth, right? It's a very hard job, you're just sitting there all day watching. It's kind of boring, there's nothing to it, nobody really wants to do that kind of thing, unless you own it and you want to protect your stuff, but it's very hard to hire people out for.
Actually,
so, what?
We have here showroom. If you have a construction site, you hire a shomer to sleep there all day.
Exactly, right. People hire shomerim for that. There's all sorts of things where you hire people to watch your items overnight, on weekends. So what they say basically is that here you see, this is a job. There is an assumption in the Gemara, whatever this is, that it's a job that the person would do himself. And he wouldn't generally hire someone out, which means here you have, he's doing a machmat atzmo, and yet the sachar is la'emza. So what do they answer? Shane udaina dilinitiruta hu da'avida. What does that mean? It's different because nitiruta is shmira. It's done for shmira purposes. Vafilu k'tani matzu mintira la. Even the k'tanim can do it. It's a job that you can even use the k'tanim, in which case they're an equal part of it. The fact that they could potentially do it, and here we start to see the difference why it had to be k'dolim and k'tanim. Because when it's the k'dolim and they say, well, we don't, right, and they don't say anything to the k'tanim, they just start working it, the assumption is, well, they're doing it because the k'tanim can't. And therefore, they split it evenly. So here we're going to say, even though they did this machmat atzmo, okay, of their own volition, right, or not their own volition, they used themselves, since the children could have done it themselves, then therefore they are part of things, and therefore we're going to say asachar la'emza. Okay, they could be part of it, and because they potentially could be part of it, therefore we're going to assume that they did it for everybody. It's a bit of a strange, it doesn't really work so well, this answer, because what does it mean? Just because the kids could have potentially done it, but they didn't do it, so it's a little difficult. So I saw a better explanation, which explains it, that it's a job that, one second, let me remember, that the, since it's something the ketanim can do, therefore, it's a very easy job, which goes back to what we said earlier, which is that since if there's something that's easy, like managing a property or watching that somebody, just to make sure that nobody steals the item or misuses it or uses it for longer than and not pay properly, since it's a job that even young children can do, therefore it's the kind of job that if he does it himself, then it doesn't mean, oh, I wasn't willing to share the proceeds with you, because they could have also helped him. In which case, if he really wanted them to help him, he would have said, you come do it for a day. Okay, which means that he's not, again, if he says, then he's clearly not mochel. But if he doesn't say anything, there's an assumption that he's mochel. Even in this case, even if he does the work all by himself, since it's easy work, right, which is a little different than those who said it's so hard to hire someone out to work for this. So there's a bit of a debate about what exactly is going on here, but this one sat a little better with me, that the idea being that if he does it himself in this case, right, then he can't say, oh, well, I'm not willing to share the profits, I worked so hard, because he didn't really work very hard. Okay, so that explanation sits better with me. Rav Safra, Shavik Avua Zuze. Rav Safra's father left him over money. Shaklinu Ava Behu Iska. So he took money from the estate, and he made a business deal with them, with the money, and obviously made a profit. Atu Achai, Tva'u Badina, Kamedya Rava. So his brothers took him to court in front of Rava. You're going to find this one interesting. Amar lehu, so what did Rava say? Rav Safra gava rabahu. Lo shavi girse v'tarech lachrine. Okay, now, before I even explain this, I just want to preface it before we read it and think this is strange. The whole question that we saw here is, would the brothers have done this on behalf of everybody, or would they not have, so to speak, wasted their time? Right? In other words, in order to invest in something, it's time and effort. And you're only willing to often make that time and effort if you're actually going to see all the profits. If you're doing it for others, you might not bother wasting your time. So the question is, how valuable is your time? So what did they say about Rav Safra? Rav Safra would never leave Lo Shavik, Lo Ozev, Girsay, his learning, Vitarech Lachrine. Okay, there's an assumption, because he sits and learns Torah all the time, if he would stop learning Torah to do a business deal, he certainly wouldn't be stopping to learn Torah to do a business deal and not actually receive all the profits himself. He obviously wanted to get all the profits himself, okay? Right, it's a very troublesome, right? It reminds us, by the way, a few tapim ago where we saw it was an attempted understanding of Admon, which we rejected, but that Admon says, right, the brothers won't split with the daughters because they need the... Right, they should get it because they need it because they learn Torah. And there's this need. Right, what's the idea? It's Torah in Derech Eretz. You have to work and learn Torah. It's not good to learn Torah and not make any money. So what did Rav Safra do? He stopped learning Torah for a little while to invest, make an investment, so that he'd have the money to be able to enable himself to learn Torah further. And the assumption being, right, that there's a hierarchy here almost, right? Then the Gemara there asks, what do you mean? So you're saying two sons, you should give all the money to the one who learns Torah and not to the, right? How could you say that? So here also it's a little disturbing because you would think someone also who learns Torah would be more giving of his money to his family to share. But in essence, that's not the way Rava paskined here, okay? He paskined and said, because again, what are we trying to get at? We don't really know what Rav Safra thought, but Rav is trying to get into his head and think, was he mochel or not? That's really the issue here. It's not like, it's not telling you a Torah scholar shouldn't invest and share with his brothers. It's more that Rav Safra said, I did this for myself. And the brothers said, hey, we want the funds, right? Obviously, Rav Safra didn't agree to give them the profits. Otherwise they wouldn't have had to go to Rava. So Rava says it must be that that's what he meant originally, since he's a big Torah scholar. He wouldn't waste his time if he wasn't going to gain all the profits.
There's also all this tension with the sugya that we learned about protecting the investment of Yitomim. So you're not allowed to invest it in something that, you know, has downside and has risk. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that within themselves, they don't have to protect each other.
Right, here he invested the funds, and who knows what could have happened to them, and yet one penalized him.
Well, his brother said that you told me too.
Right, so first of all, it doesn't say that he lost money. If he had lost money, then maybe he'd be responsible to replace what he lost. It's possible, right? They don't even talk about that because the case didn't end that way, right? Had it ended that way, it could be there would have been an issue that he'd have to replace the funds. It's also not clear how much money of the... Because remember, it could be, let's say there were two brothers. It could be he invested 50%. Obviously, there's more than two brothers here because it is Ache. But let's just say, let's say he only invested 50%. So, right. Now, again, it's not his own share because they haven't divided it up. But he took his own percentage and invested it. And then they say, well, you invested, right? Just because you took 50% of the estate. We have 50% of a stake in the 50% that you invested. So, right? So then it would be, they would claim at least half of the profits on that. Because again, it was their joint funds. Until things are divided, it's not his own 50%, but certainly, let's say he lost it all, then they'd have their 50%, and he'd have lost his 50%.
And they'd get the principal back. This is just the profits they're arguing
about. Right, for sure. Again, if he only invested 50%, then there's no caring for them. I'm talking two sons, two brothers. Okay, Isha. Now we get to the Isha part. Ha'isha she'shbicha etin nechassim ishbicha la'emza. Isha b'nechse yat me'may avidita. What's she doing with the nechassim of the yitomim? We've already learned that a woman doesn't inherit. The wife doesn't inherit from her husband. So Amar Rabbi Yirmiya b'isha yoreshet. It's talking about a woman who is Yoreshet. Now, this is a very strange, what do you mean? We just said a woman's not Yoreshet. So what does this mean? There's a few different explanations. I'm going to give you two out of the three main ones. One is to say, I'm ignoring one because I found it somewhat complicated and it didn't seem to fit in well with the words at all. So I'm going to leave that one aside. One of the options is a woman, it's a little complicated. A man marries his niece. Through his brother, okay, his brother's daughter. So he marries his niece, and then the father of the niece dies first, which means that, and she's one of two girls, okay? So there's a father with two girls, okay? Girl and girl, okay? One girl marries his brother, okay? So she marries his brother. So he dies, The brother dies, and the girls... Well, the girls... Wait, one minute.
The girls should inherit,
but wait a minute. Right, so then... Oh, 1 second. I'm missing something because
the...
Right, it has to get to the brother first, so how does that work? Oh, right, that's why. So they inherit from their father, okay? Then when the brother dies, okay, who's married to the girl, what happens? The father's inheritance, right? There's the father's inheritance of, right, you would have to say, wait, in this case, does the father come into play here? 1 second. Right. So if the brother, when the brother dies, where does his inheritance, right, sorry. Her husband dies and they have no sons. So now what happens to his inheritance? It goes to his brother, right? Because he doesn't have sons and his father's no longer alive. So where does it go after that? It goes to his brother. So when the husband dies, It goes to his brother, but his brother's not alive, so it goes to his daughters. So she gets, since there's two daughters, or however many daughters there are, there's no sons, she then inherits from the husband when he dies, because his stuff ends up coming to her through her father. Okay, again, you'd have to say it's a weird case because it means he's got, right, they each have no sons, and from her marriage, there's no children at all. Okay? There's another complicated option that's even less likely. The third option is, I think, the most likely, which is when it says Yoreshet, it means he gave it to her as inheritance, meaning as a matana, right? Because remember, we learned he's allowed to give as a gift to his wife if he wanted, and that seems to be the most basic. But I didn't want to ignore that option and wanted to show you that option exists also in the Rishonim. Okay, Pshita. So now they say, what do you mean? It's obvious that, right, this case, based on the Reisha, right, it should be totally obvious that if she invests herself, then she's going to have to split with everybody. But if she says, Re'uma she'nech li ba'ali, hare ani osav ochelet, then hishbicha la'atzma. Okay, so, ma'u detema, so now they say, no, it's not so obvious, because you might have thought what? Kevan de'lav darka le'mitrach, afal gav de'lo parish, kimo de'parish tami, kamashmalan. You might have thought in the beginning case, which is the case where we say shpicha la'emza, you might have thought it's not typical for a woman to go working and investing in property, and therefore, if she's going to do it, she's only going to do it for her own sake. And therefore, you might have thought, even though she's lo parish, even though she doesn't say the words ru'uma she'nech li ba'ali hare ani osav ochelet, still, it's going to be as if she expressed those words. And therefore, the Mishnah has to teach you kamash malan, no. It's not, in fact, the case. If she says it, she gets the profits. If she doesn't say it, she doesn't get the profits. Now, what about the second case? Again, we're going to say the same thing. Pshita, this should be obvious. So now they say, we're going to say the opposite logic, which is, ma'u detema, you might have thought, kevan deshvicha lamilta, it looks good for her. Dik amre katarcha kamayatme. If she goes and works and invests the property for the yatomim also, people say, wow, look at that woman, right? Wonder Woman, right? Look what she did. She worked hard to be toich in front of the yatomim, and therefore, achule achla, and therefore maybe she's mochel, and maybe she's willing to do it because it looks good, it reflects positively on her. We've seen this before, by the way. A lot of the cases, I'm trying to remember, but I think a lot of the cases where we say it reflects well was on the woman, right? There's this issue that women want to look better, right? Which is almost a modern kind of view, right? That the women in those days, you might have thought, oh, they don't care, but here you see now, they cared to look respectful for people, right? Especially
when the husband gets her, his name is seen. The question was, why would she care about that? Well, she wants to look better for people.
Exactly. So therefore, kamash malan. Therefore, it tells you no. If she says that, hareni osav ochelet, she gets all the profits. Okay, and we don't say, oh, she was mochel because it looks good for her. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Now we get to a totally different halacha. Hamesi isha. We're at this because Rabbi Chanina was mentioned before, so now we're saying again, Rabbi Chanina. Hamesi isha lebeno gadol b'bayit kena'o. Okay, if you marry off. You have your son marry a woman, okay, and you give him a house in which to do it, he's kona that house. That becomes his first house, okay? And as if you have him do the marriage ceremony in this house, he acquires the house even without any sort of kinyan. If a father says, I never intended to give you this, tough luck, okay? Now we're going to see, though. Vidafka gadol, only the oldest son. Vidafka bitula, and only if he's marrying a bitula. Vidafka ishto, rishona, and only if she's his first wife. Vidafka shisi o rishon, and specifically if he gets married first in the family. Okay, in other words, there was an assumption. What is this based on? There was an assumption that this was the minhag, that the father would give house to the first son who's marrying a virgin, who's in his first marriage, you know, is getting married first in the family. So therefore, if he marries him off in a particular house, right, then we can assume, again, we're going to see in a minute a bunch of exceptions to this rule, we're going to assume that he's giving him the house also, and it's as if he did a kinyan. Okay, so even without a kinyan, it's as if there was a kinyan. Now we're going to say, now we have a question. Pshita yichelo aviv bayit ve'aliyah, obviously, if the father gave him a house and the house has a second floor, bayit kana aliyah lo kana. Okay, this goes back to the beginning of Bava Batra, right? Is the aliyah included in the sale of a house? So obviously, he didn't intend to give him the bayit and the aliyah, so he doesn't own the aliyah. But bayit v'achsadra mahu. What if you have a bayit and a portico outside? Remember, we talked about there were different interpretations, but maybe it's like a glass enclosed entranceway, okay, to the front of the house. Is that included? Or shnei batim zelifnim mizeh, right? This is a review of all these sugyas we saw before. There's two houses, and he gave him the inner house, which means, right, he has to walk through the outer house. So maybe he gave him both houses. Teku. We don't know the answer. Okay, now we're going to have a contradiction, and this is going to lead us to kind of limit this a little bit. Meitive yiched lo aviv bayit ukle bayit. If the father's meyached him a house and kelim in the house, kle bayit kana, bayit lo kana. He gets the kelim become his, but not the house. So this seems to be exactly against what we just said, that he gets the house. So Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, kigon shahaya otzaro shel aviv munach sham. This braita that we're quoting is a case where the father had some treasure in the house, which means what? The father isn't giving up rights to the house. He left his most prized possessions in that house. It's obvious then that he's keeping possession of the house, because otherwise he wouldn't leave his otzar in the house. Nehar de'amre afilu shuv chadiyone, even if it has a dove coat in the house with the father's doves in it, okay, there's an assumption then that he's not actually giving him the house, because why would the father leave his shavach yonim in the house if he was intending to give it to his son? Rav Yehuda v'Rav Papa Amre, here we're going, right, we started with an otzar, which is a lot of money. We went to a shavach yonim, which doesn't sound like it's worth as much. Now we're going to something even less. Afilu atzisa deharsana. If he leaves a pot full of this fish, we've seen this karsa deharsana, I think it's a pickled fish.
You say fried.
What? Fried fish? Okay, it's a fried fish. If he leaves this pot full of fried fish in the house, then obviously he's intending to keep it for himself, right? And you think about it, you walk into this house and it's full of the smell of fried fish, right? You can imagine. It's not the way you would expect to walk into a new house that someone was giving you as a gift. Now, even more interesting, we're going to see two ma'asim, where rabbis were smart when they did this to their sons and married them off in a house. They specifically left something in the house to make sure that their son wasn't going to be able to claim later that he has a kinyan on the house. Marzutra, Ansebe Libre, Ansebe is he married him off, Nasav is to marry. He married off his son, Vitala le Sandala. He hung a sandal in the house as a sign that he was keeping the house for himself. Also, if you think about smelly, right? I'm sure they didn't wash their shoes so often, right? The, also got the smell of the fish. I don't know if there's any connection, but Rav Ashi Nasbe Libre, Vitala la Ashisha de Mishcha. He hung a cup full of oil. Okay, which also might have a smell. But anyway, he hung this cup full of oil, again, to show that he wasn't passing it on. Now we have an interesting halacha, an interesting line. Amar Mar Zutra, Hane Tlat Mile, Shavinu Rabbanan Kehilchata Belo Tama. These three things, the rabbis turn these into halacha, even though their reason is not so clear cut. Okay, some people say, what does this mean? This means it's a halacha l'moshe misina. In other words, this is something that's passed down that you don't question. Okay, but they seem somewhat difficult logically. Okay, so they're all going to have to do with kinyan. What's interesting about them is some are cases where there isn't a kinyan and we say there's a kinyan, and some are cases where there is a kinyan and we say there isn't a kinyan. So it's itself in the reverse. Okay, what are the three? Chada ha. Okay, the first one is this one, that basically if you marry off your son in a house, then the assumption is it's his. Again, it's your first son, he's marrying a betulai, all the conditions. Idach, da amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Shmuel, hakotev, the second one is this one. Hakotev kol nechasav liishto lo asah el apitropa. This relates to the halacha that I was quoting before, about when you give all your nechasim to your wife, right? You didn't really, if you write, I'm giving all my property to my wife, the assumption was you were just making an apitropa to look good in the eyes of other people, right? But not that you were actually giving her all the property. It meant that when I die, I want her to be in charge of divvying up the property and, you know, dealing with anything that needs to be done, but not actually that you were giving her the nechasim. So here you have a case where there's an actual writing, a shtar, that says you are owed all that, right? All this money goes to you, and it actually doesn't mean what it says, right? We don't hold by it. So it's the opposite of the other case where he doesn't actually write a shtar and yet it's as if there is a shtar. And the idach, the third one is de'amarav, manali biyadcha, teneu leploni, b'mamat shloshtan kana. Okay, I say to Sherry, Sherry, you have money that I owe you. Manali biyadcha. You have money that you owe me, and you owe me 100 shekel. I want you to give it to Naomi. Okay, it's my basic way of saying I want to give a gift to Naomi, but instead of taking it out of pocket, you owe me money, just you give straight to Naomi. Okay? If I do it b'mamad shloshtan, if I do it, not three dayanim, I do it when Sherry and Naomi are both in the room, and I'm in the room, okay, with all three of us there, then just by my saying it, it's a kinyan. And if I go back and I say, hey, Naomi, forget it, I don't want you to get the money from Sherry, pay me directly, Sherry, can't do it. Okay? Can't be chozer bo, it's a kinyan. Okay? So those are the three. Okay, new Mishnah. Achin hashutafin shenafal achav mehen laomanut nafal laemza. Okay, what is omanut? This is an art. This is, there are brothers who are shutafim. Again, the assumption is that we're talking about they share the estate. They're living off the estate of the father. They haven't divided up the properties. They're jointly living off the estate. And one of them gets taken to work for the king. Now, this could be, maybe he's making a lot of money because he's working for the king, or maybe it's a loss because he's not getting paid and not doing work. Either which way, whether it's a profit or, what's the opposite of profit, but nafal le'emza, okay? The loss. The loss is going to be divided, or the profit's going to be divided equally, okay? Because it wasn't his fault that he got taken to the king. Chala v'nitrape, here's a very interesting one. If somebody gets sick and has medical bills, one of the sons, nitrape mishal atzmo, he can't use the estate money to pay for it. He has to pay from his own funds. Okay, or maybe if he doesn't have his own funds, he takes from the estate a portion that says, that's my future, right, that's my portion, and he pays for the bills. Now here it's a little complicated, we're going to see in the Gemara, they're a little bit limited, but also, I saw a distinction in one of the Rishonim that it depends whether you are talking about a one-time medical cost or ongoing medical costs. Ongoing medical costs could potentially be viewed like sustenance, in which case it's going to be mizonot, which they all share, okay? And that's different from a big one-time payment. It's an interesting concept. Okay, we'll see. The Gemara limits it a little bit anyway. Tana hayomanut lomanut hamelech. Okay, first of all, there's a braita that says omanut means omanut hamelech, which we already explained. Tana rabbanan. Now we have a braita about this. Echa min achim sheminu gabai o pumustus. Okay, they made him a gabai or some sort of maybe lochem lechamot, like he's fighting wars, or some sort of policeman. Im machmat achim laachim, im machmat atzmo laatzmo. If he was chosen because every family had to give one brother, and he just randomly was the brother chosen, then we do what the Mishnah says, which is we split it. But if he got to be appointed because he was some special person, and because of that they appointed him, and he makes a profit off of it, then he gets it himself. So then they say, "Imachmat achim lachim pshita." That's obvious. If they took one from every family and he gets the profits and he happened to be the one randomly, obviously he's going to be the one. He's going to have to share it. Why does the Mishnah need to tell us this? Lo tzricha decharf tfei. Now it means, out of all the brothers, he was the smartest. So ma'u detema chorfei garim le. In other words, while it's true they're going from house to house, they chose him specifically because he was the smarter one. You might have said, and therefore maybe he should get the profits himself. Kamash malan, therefore it teaches you that no. Since every family had one person taken, the profits are split by the brothers evenly. Tana Rabbanan, Echa min achim shenatal 200 zuz, lumod Torah, o lumod omanut. Okay, if he takes money out of the estate to learn Torah or to learn a trade, yecholim ha'achim lomar lo, im ata etzleinu, yesh lecha mezonot. Im ein ata etzleinu, ein lecha mezonot. They could say to him like this, if you want to live with us, we'll pay for your food. But if you're going to take this money and move out, we're not paying for your food. So then they say, I don't understand. They should give him mezonot wherever he is. What's the difference whether he's living with them or he's not living with them? So they say, this supports Rav Huna's statement. I'm Rav Huna. Berkat habayit biruba. The blessings of the house are in the multitudes. Okay, what does this mean exactly? What this really means, at least the interpretation that to me makes the most sense that I saw, is that basically we all know that when you live by yourself, your food expenses go up, right? The more people you have, you cook, right? You cook for a lot of people. Extra person doesn't add the same amount as they would if they were living on their own. What'd you say?
All of the expenses. If you've got
any expenses.
Separate homes.
Exactly.
Everything.
Right. Everything's going to be more. And therefore, here they're specifically talking about mizono. But I guess mizono could be translated more broadly as sustenance. But I think they really mean food here. So in any case, they say, basically, right, let's say if you were living on his own, it would cost him 10 shekel a week. I'm just saying a small random number. And obviously, it's closer to hundreds of shekel. But let's say 10 shekel a week, and if you were living in the house, it would cost them 5 shekel for the extra person. So therefore, they don't help him. So then they say, what do you mean, though? They should at least give him the 5 shekel that they would have spent on him anyway. So they say, hachinami. Yeah, it's true. Words, they do. They give him the 5 shekel. They give him whatever amount they would have added to feed him also. Chalav nitrapein, nitrapein mishalatzmo. Now we're going to get into this disease. Shalach rame mishmed rabila. Loshanu ela shechalav b'pshia. Here's a great line. Only if he got sick, because it was his fault that he got sick. Okay, you can imagine the mother saying, right, you didn't take a jacket, you got sick, right? Aval ba'ones, but if it wasn't his fault, some disease came upon him, unbeknownst to him, not from anything he did, nitrapei mina emtza. Okay, then obviously they're going to share the proceeds, and the assumption is that it could have happened to any of them, and therefore, you know, if they're going to say, we're not going to pay for your medical bills, next time it's going to happen to them, and then they won't get paid for their medical bills, right? It's therefore in all their best interest. Obviously, the Gemara is going to now have to explain, what does it mean to get sick? And it wasn't such a joke that I made about the mother saying about the jacket, because look what the Gemara says. We've seen this before. Okay, from cold, like from drafts, from things that you get sick like that. Okay, when there's cold coming around the corner or coming in a tricky way, someone who's careful will keep their distance from them. And the basic assumption is that we're talking about not taking care when you go into very cold places, and that, you know, everything else is bidei shamayim, but that is not. And that's what we're talking about. In that case, then you can't assume they're going to pay your medical bills. Okay, now we're getting into a new thing about shushbinot. Okay, we've talked about this term shushbinin, which are the ushers of the chatan. Right, they're the people who stay with him all week and they make him happy. Now we're going to learn that the term shushbin comes from the word shushbinot, which were matanot, which means the people, the close friends of the chatan. It's like a bridal shower. Okay, where all the friends come and they give gifts, and then when it's that person's bridal shower, they all give gifts, right? So it's this reciprocal kind of gift that whenever somebody gets married, the groom's friends bring them gifts, which help. Generally, the assumption was it was toward the wedding ceremony, right? Toward the party. So they would bring food or something like that. They would bring gifts for the wedding ceremony. And the way it worked was that they would then reciprocate. So now we're going to see, very interestingly, that this becomes a chiyuv of reciprocation. You're obligated. So ha'achim, she'asum k'satan shushbinot b'chaya av. So some of the brothers got married when the father was still alive. And the assumption is the father was giving the gifts. Like, in other words, the father's friends were giving the gifts for the sons, right? I think I'm trying to remember now because there's a whole bunch of cases here. Right. So one father sent one of his sons to go give a gift to the son's friend when the son's friend got married. Chazra shushbinot, now when that son goes to get married, and what's going to happen now? The father's no longer alive, so the friends are going to send it to this son, but now the son shares everything with his brothers. So chazra la'emtza. Okay, since... Why is this? I'll read one more line and then we'll explain. Shashushbino nigvet bebeitin. This is something that you can demand in court. If your son's getting married or you're getting married and, you know, you're a man and the man's friend gave a gift. I'm sorry, the man gave a gift to his friend, or the father gave a gift to, right, in this case, the father gave a gift to the friend's, to the son's friend. And then when he goes to get married and the friend doesn't bring a gift, they can demand it in court. So what does this mean? Who can demand it? The father, because the father was the one who sent the gift to the friend, and he sent it through this particular son. So when this son gets married, the friend's gift gets split up between all his brothers. because he was just being sent by the father to do it. So it really belongs to the father. And anything that belongs to the father, since the father's dead, gets split evenly between all the brothers. Aval hashalech l'chaveru kadei yayim v'kadei shemen ein igvin bebeitim mipnei shein gimul chasadim. Okay, but if you're not, now here there's a debate whether we're talking about if you sent kadei yayim kadei shemen for a wedding, just as a gift, but not a shushvi note, right? You weren't one of those close friends. It's very interesting because, right? Or it's just anyone who sends a gift, right? There's an assumption that even though maybe if someone gives you a gift, you should reciprocate, it's not something that beitin can be mechayev. Okay, so in that case, that's just considered gemilu chasadim. So again, some people connect that case to a wedding. Some people say it has nothing to do with a wedding. It's just talking about general gifts. In other words, if you connect it to a wedding, then you learn that there's two types of wedding gifts. One are the reciprocal type, and one are the non-reciprocal type, and it depends. If you're the one who's the shushbinin, who we saw in sukkah, in the sukkah class last week, that the shushbinin are even patur from sukkah all the whole week, or there's a debate. Are they patur from sukkah? Are they not? And are they chayav another mitzvot? Because their job that week is bim samech lechatan. So they're part of this whole wedding party, and it's not the same as just someone comes to the wedding and gives a gift. Okay. Uri mini. Now we have a contradiction. It says in this other source, shalach lo aviv shushbinot. The father sends shushbinot through the son. Kashi chozeret, chozeret lo. When it comes back, it goes back to that son. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get split up evenly between the brothers. So there's already the contradiction. But it continues. Nishtachala aviv shushbinot, if the gift was sent to the father, kashi chozeret, chozeret min ha'emza. Okay, if it was sent to the father, for the father to give to the son, then when it goes back, right, then when he gets it back, right, if he sends it to the friend's father, right, then when it comes back, it's as if it goes to the father, which then will get split evenly between the brothers. So how do we explain this contradiction? Am Rabbi Yassi, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Kitna Nami Matnitin. We're going to have a few different answers. But the first one is, when we said this Mishnah, it really means Nishtachala Aviv. Our Mishnah is like the case of the second case, which is it was sent to the father, which means it goes back to the father, which means it gets split evenly. But if it was sent to the son, then it goes back to the son. Okay? It was sent, one second. Nishtacha le'aviv. One second, let me just clarify. I think. Right, it was sent to the father as a gift, then it goes, right, it was sent to the father. Okay, so when, assume you're the groom, and your friend's father sends the gift, and he sends it to your father for your wedding. Right? It happens sometimes, the parents are receptacles of gifts for the children, so that's what it's saying. So if it was sent to the father, you know, go deliver this to the father, then the assumption is it's to the father, in which case when it goes back, it'll get sent to the father also. So then they say, what do you mean? How could you say our Mishnah is talking about that? V'ha achin sh'asu miktzatan shushbinot katane. It says the brothers were shushbinot, which sounds like they got it. So t'nei lim miktzatan. Okay? Which is achim sh'asu lim miktzatan shushbinot. They did shushbinot for some of them, but it could still be through the father. So then they say, v'ha chazra shushbinot katane. But it says, chazra shushbinot, which makes it sound like, one second. Right, it sounds like it goes back to the brothers. And as chazra shushbinot is plural to the brothers, which sounds like the subject is the brothers and not the father. So, hachi kamar. Chazra ligvot nigvet me'emza. If they sent back to demand the money, right, then it's they. The brothers are demanding the money, not that they are supposed to be receiving it. Okay? So, in other words, they're trying to say the Mishnah is where the father's receiving and not the sons. And that would explain the contradiction. Second answer, Rav Asi Amar Lo Kashya, Kam B'Stam, Kam B'Mefarish. Okay? One is a case of, right, the Mishnah is talking about where he just sent the Shushbinot Stam. He says one of the sons should go deliver it. And so therefore, the one son who goes to deliver it, it wasn't specifically that the return gift was designated for him. It was, right? It was just that he was the one who happened to be the messenger. So when the Shushbinot comes back, right, when he goes and gets married, it wasn't specifically for him because he was just a messenger of the father randomly. And Kam b'mefarish, and the Braita, in the first line of the Braita, when it says his father sent him as a Shushbinot, right? That's when he designated, I want you to give the gift because you're the good friend. Right, whereas the other son maybe wasn't a good friend. Kidetanya, and we have a brayta to support this. Shalach lo aviv shushbinot, kashi chozeret lo. Shalach aviv shushbinot stam, right? Without designating which son, she chozeret le'emza. Okay, last answer. Ushmuel amar hacha biyaba maskinan. It was a case where the one who did it died, and then his brother went to get married. So the question is he deserving of the shushbinot in place of the brother? Right? Generally, the abam takes the place of the brother. So should he get the gift on behalf of the brother? If the brother gave the gift earlier, right? And now he should be getting the gift in return. So we say, in this case, he doesn't get it himself. Sheino notel b'ra'oy kebimuchzak. Remember? This is, we saw before, right? A yabam inherits everything of his brother, but only things that were in the possession of the brother at the time of his death, but not something that's coming to him after death, which is the shushbinit, which is shushbinot, which are coming because of the yabam. Okay, let's stop here for today, and we'll pick up from here tomorrow.